This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep. Jury selection is expected to start at the end of this week in the Kobe Bryant rape case. When the trial begins, the jury is expected to hear some details of the accuser's sex life. Last week, the Colorado Supreme Court denied the prosecution's appeal seeking to prevent that. This case calls attention to the effectiveness of rape shield laws. They're meant to protect the victims. Adam Liptak is the national legal correspondent for the New York Times.
The rape shield law says that as a general proposition, evidence concerning a rape victim's sexual history must be excluded from evidence unless the defendant can make a compelling case that some aspect of that history is important to an issue that goes to his or her guilt or innocence.
Which is exactly what Kobe Bryant's defense sought to do.
That's right. He had made the case that at least some evidence of her very recent sexual conduct was relevant to the case.
How often in courtrooms across the country is a similar question coming up, where the woman's past sexual history or the victim's past sexual history is something that the defense wants to make an issue of, and a judge has to make a decision about how to interpret a rape shield law that would ordinarily prevent that?
The rape shield laws across the country have really fundamentally changed the dynamics of rape prosecutions, and the question comes up often. Here we have a quite novel situation, and it would be unfortunate if women who have been sexually assaulted and are contemplating coming forward with charges thought that the rape shield laws are ineffective, because generally they are.
You mean that normally the rape shield laws are effective in excluding the victim's sexual history from the courtroom?
Yes, as irrelevant. But that's not to say that narrow pieces of evidence that go to a defendant's guilt or innocence could possibly be excluded, because the defendant, after all, has a constitutional right to a fair trial and to defend himself. And the evidence that the judge let in this case seems to go squarely to important issues about the encounter between Mr. Bryant's accuser and Mr. Bryant.
You said this is a novel case. What is novel about these circumstances?
This case has given rise to 4, 5, 6 thorny legal issues when you would have thought it would have been, at the outset, a straightforward rape prosecution. There's no question there was an encounter. Mr. Bryant says that it was consensual. And a year ago, when we first started looking hard at this case, it seemed that a jury would simply have to decide whether he was telling the truth or she was telling the truth. And it turns out there's biological evidence. There are things that she did and said beforehand that might call into question whether the account she later offered is accurate. It turns out to be a much more complicated case than we thought going in.
And secrecy has become an issue here, which I suppose shouldn't be a surprise given the massive amount of media attention, but still.
Yeah, and it goes back a little bit to the rape shield law, because however effective the judge was in drawing the line in the right place to uphold the woman's privacy in court, her privacy outside of court has been seriously damaged. And it makes you wonder whether the rape shield law, whatever it does legally, is effective when there's this kind of press attention. Her name, although not used by mainstream news organizations, is all over the internet, for instance. And the court has twice briefly posted it by mistake. And on one occasion, it sent out a transcript inadvertently to 7 news organizations. And that has done some damage to her case as well, because the public now has that one side of the evidence.
Well, Mr. Liptak, thanks very much.
Thank you, Steve.
Adam Liptak is national legal correspondent for the New York Times.